No matter the size, age, or activity level of your best friend, you want a dog food that's natural, feeds great, and is full of all the goodness you demand. That's what's packed into every bag of Country Vet Naturals. Country Vet Naturals is just what the name says. Natural goodness in every bag. Grain-free? Sure. There's a grain-free cat and dog food and treats. Learn more and find a dealer at countryvetnaturals.com. Country Vet Naturals. Loved by pets. Trusted by owners.
How are organizations investing in their future? Many are choosing to invest in their people in the same way they invest in new equipment, facilities, and IT systems. That is one of the wisest investments you can make. How do you determine training needs? Turn to the award-winning professionals at Taro International for a complimentary needs assessment and gap analysis. Visit taro.com, that's T-E-R-O.com, to learn more. This is Ro from the Taro team.
Insight on Business, the News Hour with Michael Libby is made possible through the support of AARP Iowa. Real possibilities for people of every age. AARP Iowa and Country Vet Naturals. Loved by pets, trusted by owners. CountryVetNaturals.com.
Welcome back to the Business News Hour. We are broadcasting all week long from our nation's capital, Washington, D.C., as part of the Greater Des Moines Partnership's annual, this happens to be, by the way, the 39th annual mission to Washington, D.C., to talk about public policy, to talk about jobs, to talk about all kinds of things, from farm bills to transportation, having a governmental interaction with elected leaders from our great state of Iowa. With us in studio at this point is Eric Burmeister. Eric is a returning guest to the Business News Hour, and here we are talking about the Polk County Housing Trust Fund. What a great opportunity this is to finally once again catch up with you, Eric. I'm a fan, you know that, so I'm just going to just gush all over you here for a moment.
Well, thanks. I appreciate it and appreciate everything that you do to help keep housing top of mind for our community.
And it is top of mind to Eric Burmeister, but it doesn't appear to be always top of mind to many people who are living in comfort and convenience.
Yeah, and I like the fact that you added comfort and convenience, because there are a lot of things that you can talk about when you talk about housing. And one of them is certainly equity. And what it means to our community when we take a look at folks that are an important part of, and frankly essential
to the driving economy,
to driving our, and also to our quality of life that we keep bragging about. And take a look at, are those folks finding housing that they can afford in places and locations that they want to be?
Let's be even more blunt about this, shall we?
Sure.
We're talking, aren't we, about restaurant workers. We're talking about housekeeping staff. We're talking about individuals who perform services and functions that enhance our quality of life. Correct?
Of course. And they are our service workforce, as I call them. Many of them are making certainly less than $12 or $13 an
hour. Making less than a livable wage.
Making way less than a livable wage. And then really are the kinds of folks that are responsible for us winning those kind of awards and getting those kinds of ratings that we get.
Absolutely correct. And sometimes we don't. Well, we don't. We just simply don't focus on that, because that's not all shiny and bright and wonderful.
Well, that, and there are no easy answers.
There you go.
And so it's always easy to, I don't want to say ignore, but certainly easy to choose another topic that's a little bit, or another problem that's a little bit easier to solve.
Yeah. Eric Burmeister, ladies and gentlemen, the Polk County Housing Trust Fund. Tell us about what is the Polk County Housing Trust Fund and how do you guys work?
Sure. Well, we are a private 501c3. We actually do three things out of our office. The first is that we do a lot of research and planning work. So looking for and hoping to be able to understand and quantify the affordable housing that we do have in the region. Also the demographic that needs that affordable housing. So talking a little bit about our service workforce, as we just were. Second, we do an awful lot of advocacy work. You and I have been on these kinds of programs. We're here in Washington, D.C., talking to the folks from our own community as well as our federal delegation about why housing is important. And then third, we do have state and local funding of about $2 million that allows us to both help build or to produce new units of affordable housing and preserve units of existing affordable housing.
It's the voice of Eric Burmeister, ladies and gentlemen. One of the things, Eric, I want, because this is economics as well, I am sometimes astounded at my friends who are in the business of creating what's called affordable housing, and at the same time think entitlements are a horrible thing and we should do away with them. But in the end result, many of these builders and construction people are getting subsidies from the government to do the very same thing that they're building. How do you have that both ways?
Well, I think that there's always a as someone says, the rest of the story. But I think that as a society, it is impossible to do anything that in some way does not have government involvement. I think that we had that argument probably 8 years ago with some comment that our President Barack Obama made about you didn't build this, trying to quantify what really was government assistance and what wasn't government assistance. And so the fact is, yes, we have a lot of times that the government picks winners and losers in this sort of thing. So,
I got it. All right, let's talk about some answers to some of the tough questions. And we started this conversation with you, Eric, talking about individuals who are spending perhaps 35, 40, 50% of their income in which to live. Mm-hmm. How do we change those dynamics? How do we create housing that's affordable, that's close to where individuals are working, and do this in a fashion that it doesn't sound as though we're adding to the public dole?
Well, I think that, first of all, it's not easy. And it is it will be a very long slog, David, to make up the shortage in the inventory that we currently have. And it's expensive. And that's just the honest truth. Because construction costs continue to go up, costs continue to go up. And the fact is that to produce new units of affordable housing today costs more than it cost last year, and it will cost more next year. But one of the things I think that we at the Trust Fund are about right now is what I call the long game.
And good
the
for you.
And the fact is that there are things that we can do as a community today to make sure that we are keeping up with demand in the future. Cities and communities do long-range planning all of the time, and they take a look at where they think their city is going to grow geographically. They take a look at where they think that certain land uses ought to be. And they do it through a comprehensive planning
absolutely.
You know, exercise that sometimes is 25, 30 years out.
Yes.
Well, what we need to be doing and adding to that is taking a look at where our job growth is going to be, and not just the six-figure jobs that we like to talk about, but take a look at where the low-wage job centers are going to be in the future. And today, setting aside land for affordable housing
that will then feed the jobs that are at these places.
Exactly. Yeah. And the fact is that the price of the land then will not rise above the use that is assigned to it.
And interesting.
So if we talk now about going out and saying, and developers do it all the time. I did it for 30 years. You say to a city, okay, well, we're going to use this land for residential, then we want a little higher density over here, we want commercial over there, and you master plan this. But from a developer standpoint, what you do is you then take the various prices or value of all of those pieces, and then you put it on a same pro forma and say, you know what, at the end of the day, when this is fully built out, I will make X number of dollars an acre on this particular, you know, 25-acre plot of land that we've just master planned.
Wow. And doing that, and then if you roll into that, the affordable housing component,
right,
you're really not losing money on the deal
at
all.
No, you're not. And so I think developers horse trade with communities all the time.
Sure.
And say, give me a little more commercial and I'll give you another park. You know, if you give me a little more land, another acre of land that I can sell at X number of dollars, I'll give you an acre or two for a park.
There you go. It is amazing what happens in this whole horse trading world, isn't it? You know, one of the things, let's break this down for individuals who might be listening to in any community, in anywhere across the United States or in foreign countries. And we do have people that listen to this all over the world, which is really amazing. But, for example, if you have retail density and you have restaurant density, which could be rolled into retail, I suspect, but you don't have housing that individuals that work there can live in the area, that means an added expense because they have to travel from a great distance away. Would that be accurate?
Well, of course.
And so what happens to the take-home pay of individuals that are doing that?
Well, exactly what you'd expect. You simply add more to your cost of making your money. So there's a cost for every dollar that you make, and you can figure that out.
Sure.
You know, I made a dollar, but it cost me X number of cents in terms of transportation, in terms of, you know, in terms of cleaning and washing the clothes that I had to wear. You can take it right down to the, you know, to your daily expenses. It cost me X number of dollars or X percentage to make that dollar. And so when you start adding huge transportation costs on it, your effective net take-home pay goes down. But even more so, at some point, the restaurant owner and the shop owner are going to start to push back and say, you know, I can't find anybody that's willing to drive 50 miles to get to my restaurant to be the maitre d' or be the server or be the dishwasher. And that's when I think communities are going to start to wake up and go, oops, I think we really goofed and made a mistake by not providing for adjacent housing for those folks to live.
Yeah, and we've seen this in history. There's historical components to this, and unfortunately they've had bad raps, but they were called the company store, the company apartment,
yep,
or the company
town.
Company town, right,
yep.
Where it was unfortunate, but you would pay X amount of dollars, usually a below livable wage, but you controlled everything. We're not talking about that, but we're talking about being just and humane and offering
right
a better way.
Right. And I don't, and remember, this is not a, at least what I'm talking about is not about a particular restaurant or a particular company providing housing.
Right.
I'm talking about a city determining whether or not there should be land in the vicinity of a low-wage job center that affordable housing can be built.
It all certainly does make sense. We've been talking with our good friend who has been so kind with his time, Eric Burmeister, with the Polk County Housing Trust Fund. Eric, thanks for doing this.
Thanks a lot.
We're going to stop for just a moment, and I want to bring Chelsea into this discussion for just a second because she's a board member. And Chelsea, I'm going to slide this over to you. We're going to switch gears here for just a moment because we got really lucky. We not only had Eric Burmeister in the last set, but now we get a board member for the Polk County Housing Trust Fund. Her name is Chelsea Lepley. And Chelsea is here in Washington, D.C. with us, well, walking beside our good friend Eric, making sure that I'm sure he's not in trouble, right? Is that?
I do my best.
Yeah. So why volunteer to be a member of the board of the Polk County Housing Trust Fund?
Well, it was actually quite an honor to be invited to do so. And the reason that came about is because I've been involved with my neighborhood association and I've been involved with my community in a lot of different ways as a volunteer. And every county supervisor gets a seat or a delegate on the Polk County Housing Trust Fund.
Right.
And so I was honored that Tom Hawkinsmith invited me to be his delegate there. And the reason that he did that was because he knows I'm passionate about social justice, but I'm also passionate about practical solutions and making sure that I can help my neighbors find places that they can afford to live. You know, Eric does such a great job talking about it in economic terms, and he's familiar with all of the industry jargon about AMI and number of units and things like that. And I think one of the balances that a volunteer board member can bring is, what does that look like when you talk to your neighbors about it? So I don't think about it in terms of how many units we can buy for what percent of AMI. I think about it as, I live by Lutheran Hospital. These are my neighbors. And so it's important to me to be able to provide a service that I'm capable of that benefits everyone in my city.
And at the same time, doing something positive and good, eh?
Absolutely.
Yeah. With regard to being a board member of the Polk County Housing Trust Fund, which I think is fabulous that you're doing that, other than the intrinsic value of feeling good about what you're doing, how do you contribute to how does the board contribute to the overall success? Is it through advocacy? Is it through watching the dollars? Is it through making sure that Eric's compensated well? How do you react, or how do you make that work?
Sure, two out of those three.
Let me guess the third, yeah.
Right. So the advocacy is the part I'm passionate about. Yeah. That's why I asked to be involved in the policy committee. But we have several different committees. Some of them involve marketing and communicating. Like the Can I Be Your Neighbor campaign was a really effective one, I thought. It was about those retail workers or nurses or teachers. This is what a person who uses affordable housing looks like. So those kinds of things. But we also have a development committee, and we do fundraising. And so there are people who help evaluate applications, and then we decide on which to fund as a board.
You just mentioned something I think that is stunning. I'm Your Neighbor program?
Yep, the Can I Be Your Neighbor?
Right. So identifying who utilizes affordable housing. And I think it comes as a great surprise to individuals who those people are, what they look like, and what they're really doing.
Yeah, it defies a lot of the stereotypes. I think people probably get a certain image in their mind that's pretty deliberately created. But in our neighborhoods and our communities, it's cashiers. You've seen these people if you bought a coffee, right? Or if you got on a bus, or if you even parked your car somewhere. It's people who really might be your actual neighbors.
Yeah.
And you don't always know when someone's using these services either. People think of affordable housing as a big public housing project, but in fact, any landlord can accept those vouchers for the most part, and so you might not know if your neighbor is using housing assistance at all.
Interesting stuff. Polk County Housing Trust Fund. Chelsea, thanks for taking some time and volunteering, first of all, for a really good cause, but also for making the trip to D.C.
Well, thank you.